Hi, welcome to episode 24 of the Woke-ish podcast. This is Ebony.
And this is Zelma.
And this week we'll be talking about gender inequality in housework for our What's Being Slept On segment. But before we get there, we'll start with our shout-out segment.
Yes, and so our first shout-out goes to the startup app Mahme, M-A-H-M-E-E, because it aims to reduce maternal mortality. So the company works to help women during the weeks and months after they've given birth via a mobile app that's designed to better connect new moms with healthcare and support, offering tools like surveys to assess their postpartum emotional and physical health. So for those of you that don't know, maternal mortality is pretty high here in the United States, particularly among women of color, particularly among Black women. And the sensitive time is not actually only during the labor, but up to a year after a woman gives birth, because they're supposed to be going into checkups to make sure everything is, the recovery is going well, that things are healing as they should. And so this app is designed in order to help women kind of keep track the months and the weeks after they've given birth. So the app received $3 million in new funding to grow its team, a portion of which comes from Serena Williams, the tennis star who made headlines last year after she talked about how she almost died shortly after giving birth to her daughter. Melissa Hanna is the CEO of Mahme and a co-founder along with her mother, Linda Hanna. And in the article, I didn't say she was Black, but she's not white. So a part of me feels like this is specifically, you know, inspired or targeted to help more vulnerable women. So I think this is really cool because I, for new moms like me who use our phones for everything, there's an app that has some surveys and I use it to keep track of like whether things were going well, especially because I had a kind of, because I have depression in my past, one of the things that I wanted to make sure that I was in tune with was with postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. And so this survey that I took would just kind of, it was like 10 questions and it would ask you these questions about increased anxiety and depression to give you an indicator of like, this isn't normal. Because when you're a new mom, you don't know what's normal and what's not. And you have a whole bunch of hormones from breastfeeding, from just giving birth is really taxing on your body. So I think this is a really great idea, especially because maternal mortality is an issue in that's impacting American women, and particularly women who are from more vulnerable populations. Just so shout out to Melissa Hanna and her mom. And I think it's cool that it's like a mom, daughter teaming up together to do this app. And, you know, shout out also to Serena for like for funding and giving money so that this app could keep growing.
Yeah. Our second shout out goes to a 17-year-old David Ledbetter, who spent this past Saturday registering people to vote outside of the Popeyes fast food restaurant in Charlotte, North Carolina, as individuals lined up and stood waiting to get one of Popeyes' highly acclaimed chicken sandwiches. So I guess he's a part of a group of people, or maybe I can't tell if it was a big group or if it was just kind of him and his family, but they kind of walked the line and inquired about whether or not people were registered. And he was happy to discover that many people who stood in line were already registered, but he was still ultimately able to register about 20 people who had never voted before. And so it's funny because he's 17 and he actually isn't even legally able to vote himself. Yeah. So, you know, good for him for kind of taking it upon himself to go above and beyond his like civic duty, especially considering that he himself is underage. But I also read that he has already pre-registered so that once he turns 18, he can start voting.
He's gonna be super, some sort of senator.
Yeah, this is a super proactive kid because I was not concerned. But yes, that wraps up our shout out segment, and now we'll jump into our In the Know segment. Extra, extra, read all about it. Okay, so now for our In the Know segment.
Yes. So our first In the Know story is kind of a positive story embedded in a negative story, but I wanted to talk about this even though some time has passed. I still wanted to bring it up because whenever we talk about things in the know, I always like bringing up updates, especially when it's positive. So a couple weeks ago in our, I think it was our most recent episode, we talked about the El Paso shootings, and one of the victims of the El Paso shooting was Margie Record. And when she was killed, she left behind her partner of 22 years, who considered her his only close family. Apparently, the couple had moved to El Paso a few years earlier, so they didn't have many local relatives and friends. And he was concerned because he didn't know if a lot of people would be able to make it to her funeral. So the funeral home where a record service had been planned put out a call on Facebook on issuing an open invitation saying that Mr. Antonio Basco was married for 22 years to his wife Margie Record. He had no other family. He welcomes anyone to attend his wife's services. And apparently hundreds of people showed up. The line to get in was super long and people were waiting hours just to pay their respect, not only to her, but to, they were also giving him hugs. Whenever he walked into the funeral service, people clapped for him and he was overcome with emotion. And I think it just kind of showed community. It's an example of community coming together. And I understand his kind of anxiety and sadness about the fact that no one would be able to be at a funeral, because even though she's dead and it's not like she would, you know, who attends your funeral or not, there's something about not having a lot of people there that makes you feel that they're not valuing the importance that that person played in your life, even if it's because people aren't, because you moved there recently. And so I think it was great of the community to not only show up for the service, but to also show support to him. So even though this was a tragedy, I mean, I can't imagine being married to someone for 22 years and then having them murdered. But it was just great that the community came out to support him. And I saw videos of his reaction, and he seemed genuinely appreciative of everyone. And just shout out to El Paso for kind of coming together and in solidarity to provide comfort in that a very terrible moment for that man. And you know, it's nice to know that there are terrible people, but there are also good people. So just wanted to bring that update to the El Paso shooting story, just to kind of show that, you know, communities can come together, and this is hopefully going to start the process of his healing.
Yeah, I was also reading that, but this was before the funeral, this was a few weeks ago, or a couple weeks ago, that Beto had gone down to visit him.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and had also tweeted basically his wishes, asking, you know, for the funeral to be open to the public. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of people that probably follow Beto on Twitter or,
good,
you know,
him,
came across that tweet, mm-hmm, showed up, which is probably the reason for like the crazy turnout.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I appreciated that about Beto too, that he like went down,
yeah,
and visited like each person who,
yeah,
had lost, you know, the family of people who had been killed.
Yeah, especially because, yeah, he's like, this is my community, but he actually went and showed that they, yeah, are, he cares about his community, and
yeah,
I think that's important. It, mm-hmm, just, it's important for other people to recognize the value that someone had, because when the person that you love's death is just being, the only reason they know that person's because it's associated with this terrible thing. Mm-hmm. It's nice when there's something positive that's attributed to that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then our second story is a story that has it's gotten a lot of back and forth, especially since I follow a lot of different Instagram celebrities and like celebrities that are kind of famous outside of just the social media realm. But the divide that the story has caused is so interesting to me. So for those of you that don't know, Jay-Z has recently announced a partnership with the NFL. So through Music and Entertainment, Carter said that he can help amplify the league's Inspire Change initiative for social justice and the opportunity to potentially accomplish big things and uplift many in communities important to him. So he was saying that that was an opportunity he couldn't ignore. Carter understands that many people believe he should have shut the door on the NFL, but he says that people have to evolve. People have to want to be better, and people have to want to have conversations. This isn't Twitter. You can't just throw someone out if they make a mistake. This is the real world. You can't say, oh, you made a mistake, you're canceled, I'm never speaking to you again. That doesn't accomplish anything. That's what I believe. I believe real change is had through real conversations and real work. Reports have also suggested that Carter will soon acquire a significant ownership interest in an NFL team. So as you can imagine, this has gotten a lot of response and backlash, especially by Nessa, who is
fiance, partner, I don't know, partner,
yeah, kind of saying like, hey, he was not, because there was an article, I think it was in Variety, that kind of insinuated that Kaepernick had been told about this.
I think Jay-Z said, or I think that Jay-Z had said that they had had conversation, but it didn't specify whether, like, how recent that conversation was. So was this, like, last year when you were, the partnership was, like, in talks? Or was this recently, like, yo, I'm doing this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so she came out and was like, Kaepernick was not involved in this. He was not aware of this. He did not give the go-ahead. These are lies. And then a lot of other athletes and people, I know Sean King, kind of made statements that said, we still support Kaepernick. Yeah. We're not supporting this partnership. And then there are people on the other side that were like, I know like Amanda Seales kind of was critical of Sean King's comment about Kaepernick not giving his blessing to this. And then I saw like Miss Tina Lawson, Beyonce's mom, reposted something that was just, it was like a quote that said something about like, you can't always stay poor.
I'd rather jump out the window for her son and mom.
Yeah. And I mean, a part of me is just like, I mean, you can't throw someone out if they made a mistake. Yeah, of course, because you made a billion mistakes personally, and you were forgiven and exonerated for those mistakes. And so, you have the ability to, in his life, I don't know, I agree with the whole, like, Nessa's criticism was, she is not as mad as the partnership. Like, he's entitled to do. She's allowed to have her opinions about whether she thinks that she can be critical about it or not. Mm-hmm. He's allowed to do whatever he wants with his money. But to wrap it up in saying that it's an initiative for social justice and that this is kind of a slap in the face because the NFL literally made Colin Kaepernick's life very, very difficult because he was doing a symbolic action in support of, kind of as a symbol of social, to show injustice.
Yeah.
And so for them to just never apologize for that, and two, never, I know there was a settlement, so they may have given him money, and that may be in a way how they, I don't know, who knows, maybe they did apologize to him behind closed doors. We'll never know because they're not allowed to disclose any of those things. But I understand both sides. I understand people being really upset about the partnership, and I understand, especially if Kaepernick himself is saying, this is not something that I was aware of, and I kind of feel like this is a slap in my face.
Oh, did he say that?
No, I think like by him not speaking against the criticism.
Yeah. But the thing is like, Is he allowed? Like, because we don't, the only thing is, like, we don't know the terms of of his, like, I'm sure they made him sign something.
Yeah.
In exchange for the settlement.
That's true.
So he may not be able to speak out. And, also, if you're partnered with this woman, like, she could, and she isn't bound to silence, maybe she's speaking on his behalf. We don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just in terms of, like, I don't. The Kaepernick thing is difficult because we don't know how he feels because he may not be able to speak on it. But in terms of Jay-Z's partnership, I think it's a good idea, especially because Black people are constantly talking about having a seat at the table. If we want to have a seat at the table and have people speak on our behalf, we have to let them take a seat. We cannot be like, oh, well, they did this and so they're forever like, I mean, I guess if y'all want to continue to boycott the NFL and not watch games, that's totally fine. Like, I don't think that that's an issue. But people are going to, like, Black boys are going to continue to play football. They're going to continue to want to be professional athletes. And so if that's going to be the case, they need somebody to speak up for them on their behalf. And hopefully Jay-Z could potentially be that person. We don't know whether or not he can. Only time will tell. That's so true. If a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years go by and nothing has changed, then yeah, let's look at Jay-Z crazy and, you know, come and revisit the topic. But we can't come for him before we've even seen whether or not anything good would come of this. So yeah, I mean, unless we were gonna, like, I don't know. I think that the same energy that people are using to boycott the NFL, people need to be using to also discourage Black boys from playing football and from going to the NFL in the first place. And if we're not going to do that, then we need to just recognize that ultimately the issue is not, the issue does not stop with Colin Kaepernick. There is still more work to be done. And even before this whole Kaepernick thing and kneeling for the flag thing, the NFL was problematic already because of all this CTE stuff. And so,
and domestic violence.
Yeah, and domestic violence. So we cannot, like, it's one of those, don't let this distract you from the fact that it's still a problem beyond the flag and beyond kneeling and beyond those rules. Like, there are, you know, I mean, these are all issues, I guess, of, like, these are all kind of matters of life and death, we can say. You know, because police brutality is, you know, a matter of life and death. CTE is also potentially a matter, or not potentially, also a matter of life and death. So these things need, I think, equal weight, need to hold equal weight. The police brutality situation, you know, beyond the NFL is an issue. So we got to continue to tackle that. We can't, you know, lose track of what our ultimate goal is, and being distracted by this Kaepernick thing, I think, is an issue. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, you know, Beyonce's halftime performance, whatever, years ago, and Jay-Z's kind of what the interviews that he's given via the media, and any other ways that he's been outspoken, kind of evidence that they are for the people, you know, and they've paid for tons of funerals of people. They've been, you know, they're super supportive of Black Lives Matter. They give a lot of behind closed doors money to them. So I don't think that I don't think that we need to necessarily question where his loyalty lies. I think that they're hopefully going to do pretty solid work.
I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah.
No, and I think it's fair to say wait to see what goes of it. But you can't. I think just the pictures that they just look so bad of him and like Roger Goodell just like haha kiki. I could totally see why if I'm supporting Colin Kaepernick and I see Jay-Z laughing with the guy responsible for silencing and keeping this man from making. From playing football and basically ending his career, even though some people argue that he's not the one making all the moves, he's just the figurehead. So I can also see like the initial reaction is to be angry at that, but I think you're right that, you know, we do have to take everything he does in into context, and he does and him and Beyonce do a lot of good work, and so that he has a point in like that can't be dismissed because we're mad at one thing he does.
Yeah, I think he definitely should. He could have said more, maybe. I don't know what they're allowed to say, but it seems like he could have given the people a little bit more, but they don't, they also don't really seem like they care too much about what people think, so there could be that too.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so that wraps up our In the Know segment, and now we'll jump into our What's Being Slept On segment.
The show suggests that you wake the fuck up.
Okay, so now for our What's Being Slept On segment. So there was this article trending on Twitter called Gender Equality Starts in the Laundry Room. And this was published on Bloomberg.com. And typically I, you know, wouldn't necessarily take a online kind of popular article as the gospel, but they also cite a lot of academic articles as well that confirm these same statistics. So I just wanted to kind of give that, I just kind of wanted to preface this segment with that like, you know, as I'm kind of running through some of the summary information about the article, like, you know, I think that it is our, you know, we're, I think for this time period, we're pretty inclined to be like critical or questioning like these reports, but like, nah, this is true. So just to start out and give y'all some kind of like a synopsis that we put together based on the article, I will, let me see. Yeah, I'll just dive into the summary and then we'll kind of go through some questions and talk about like our own mm-hmm. lives and experiences and like what we do. So women today are doing just as much housework as women did 100 years ago. But different from women 100 years ago, women today are just as likely as men to have a full-time job. So, you know, juggling or balancing that housework with a full-time job is what makes today's women, what makes the experience of today's women different than women a century ago. Ultimately, this means that although there's been a shift in gender relations overall, so women have more rights, and women are no longer made to stay at home as full-time housewives, there hasn't been much change in women's home responsibilities, even though women now spend the bulk of their time outside the home. So the average full-time working woman spends between 21 to 27 hours a week or more on housework. This includes cleaning, cooking, caring for children, etc. And the time just keeps going up. Apparently. So a few explanations have included that we live in bigger houses now and they take longer to clean. We've also raised the standard of cleanliness. So clothes worn today are only worn once and then they go into the hamper versus, I guess, back in the day, people wore the same clothes repeatedly for weeks at a time and then they, you know, went through the laundry. So we also, and then we also invest a lot more time in our kids. Mm-hmm. So before, you know, it was kind of like kids were considered adults at like, I think 13 or something crazy like that. And then they got a job or whatever. and like, you know, we weren't constantly nurturing them. So that kind of increases the time as well. So while things have gotten a lot more efficient with, you know, I don't know, we have like automatic washer and dryers, we have dishwashers and things like that. We've just kind of redistributed how and where we spend our time. So all of this has occurred in spite of the fact that women currently earn more bachelor's degrees than men. And so we're pursuing college educations at a higher rate than men. And although the gender wage gap does persist, women now enter the labor force at higher rates than men as well, and are now represented within every industry, even the male-dominated fields. Of course, there's still some underrepresentation in those fields, but we're in there. Also, women have fought and continue to fight for better family leave policies, but still, time off isn't universal, and really varies depending on the prestige of the occupation. So blue collar jobs offer about 6 weeks of maternity leave on average, but no paternity leave is mandated. If fathers want time off, they have to use their, like, either use their sick time, or at some jobs, their vacation time. So, you know, like, once you get up into, like, the white collar, like, corporate jobs, there's more vacation time that men can access to use as their paternity leave. But in the like, kind of working class, like, blue collar jobs, there isn't really much vacation time. And then other industries, like academia, for example, offer about 3 months of maternity leave. And many universities also offer paternity leave of equivalent time. But that's not universal. And according to the article, men complete much less housework, almost half of what women do. Also, they have more leisure time, and they only spend about four more hours at work during the week than women do. Yet, the reason that women often have, the reason that women often spend less time at work is because they're taking on the bulk of childcare responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So that extra 4 hours that women aren't working could be the time that it takes to drop off kids at school, pick them up, or even, like, prepare them for school. So, like, making their lunches, getting them dressed and all that, potentially shuttling them back and forth to whatever after extracurricular activities they do. So it isn't that, like, you know, women aren't at work, so they're just chilling. And then also, the housework that women take on tends to be less flexible than the housework that men do. So even when men are doing, you know, quote unquote housework, it is things like home repairs, outdoor chores, or kind of one-off projects that are not, you know, that don't demand kind of like daily attention. So it can kind of be done as, you know, the man's schedule permits. Whereas women tend to take on the daily or weekly tasks like laundry, groceries, cleaning, childcare, etc., that can't really be deferred if she wants to work late. So it's like, you know, nah, I can't, you know, take this overtime or stay at work late and put off grocery shopping for next week because kids gotta eat, you know. It's, yeah, like, you know, or we need clothes to wear for next week, so the laundry kind of has to be done. So there's a lot less flexibility in women's housework. But, you know, I don't want to play men and make it seem like they aren't doing anything, mm-hmm. Especially today's men. So millennial men are doing a ton more housework and childcare related stuff than previous generations. So if you're listening to this and you're a woman and you're thinking, golly, the man I'm living with doesn't do shit, you know, think about what your grandmother was with, because they, our men today do a lot more than previous generations, but there's still more work to be done. So our generation is actually the most egalitarian of any generation to date, which means that we're more about gender equality than previous generations have been. So, you know, whereas most women do between 21 and 27 hours of housework a week, men do about 10, but that is 10 more hours than their fathers or grandfathers did. So yeah, we've got it just a little bit better, slightly. Okay, and so then why is this actually a problem beyond just simple fairness and, you know, just being annoyed that, you know, we as women do more housework than our partners do? So it poses an economic problem. People who work longer hours, or at least appear to be working longer hours, can ultimately command higher salaries and bigger bonuses at the end of the year. So pay is allocated disproportionately to people willing to put in the longest hours. You know, if you're going to your boss and you're trying to ask for a raise, they might ask for, you know, to see, like, you know, the amount of work that you've done, or depending on your career, your billable hours or whatever. And if you are spending less time at work, so for women, spending on average 4 hours less at work, or less time at work than men, that puts women at a disproportionate advantage or disadvantage relative to men. So ultimately that could be contributing to the gender pay gap. And so, yeah, so I think that those are some things to consider. And, you know, we can think about like solutions to this issue. So one solution that just screams out is like, you know, get men to do more housework. And I think that as someone that lives with a man, that is a lot easier said than done. Mm-hmm. And it's not because, and it's not always because the man is just unwilling to do the work. Like the kind of response that I get a lot of time from my fiance is that, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm down to clean, or I don't have a problem cleaning, I just want to do it on my time, you know, or according to my schedule or when I feel like it, kind of thing. And our standards of cleanliness are different, yes. You know? So yes. He might feel like, oh, okay, I can clean the shower, or I feel like cleaning the shower once a month.
Yes. Like, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. Like this, the kitchen being messy, or the living room being messy, or the laundry sitting unfolded on the couch for a week doesn't bother him.
Yeah.
Like it bothers me.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, you know, we... Like, Zelda and I, I'm sure, could go on and on about gender socialization. And, you know, maybe we will talk a little bit about gender. We haven't done that in a while, like on a future episode. But, you know, we have been taught, like, boys and girls are taught differently. They're socialized differently. And a lot of times it's because parents think that, you know, this aligns with how boys and girls are naturally, that mm-hmm. girls are just naturally cleaner, mm-hmm. naturally want to clean and cook, whereas boys are naturally dirtier and naturally do not want to cook or clean. That is not a fact. That is not biology. These are things that we have been taught and that we then pass on to our kids. And so when we pass this on to our kids, what ultimately happens? Boys and girls grow up to be men and women who approach cooking and cleaning differently. Men have been taught as boys that they do not have a natural desire to cook and clean. And what does that do? It makes men think that they naturally are just dirtier and can't cook as well as women. And it's just not a fact. And then men and women, or heterosexual men and women, if they have marriage desires, they get married, and that leads to this like inequality in housework that we see. So if parents raise their sons, you know, in the same way that they did their daughters in terms of cleanliness and learning to cook and things like that, then what would happen is that you would see these inequalities slowly start to decline or diminish, and then over generations they would go away. But that takes one, I mean, awareness and I guess a belief that, like, no, these things are not biology. Like, there are a lot of people out there that still think that they are. And so we have to get to the point first where we all are kind of on the same page about this stuff being socialization, to then start teaching our children and socializing them differently. Because it's not, I personally feel like the whole get men to do more housework thing puts an unfair burden on women and like wives and things to teach our sons thing, or to not our sons, to teach our husbands things that their mothers didn't teach them, or their parents in general didn't teach them, you know? So it's like, if Maurice can do the housework. One, it takes him longer to do it than it does me, because I guess I just have like a certain routine, and yeah, like I've seen him clean. It just takes him a lot longer to do things than it does me. So I have to wait for him to feel like doing it, or for things to occur to him as a problem, or like nag him to do it according to my schedule, which also seems unfair, because it's not my fault and it's not his fault that like we are socialized differently.
Yeah,
that's, you know, society's fault. I wouldn't even blame our parents, because they're just doing a product of like their environment and like culture, you know. So it has to be like a group effort. But I think that also makes me a part of the problem, because if I'm not willing to be on him about it or teach him how to do the things that he doesn't know how to do, et cetera, then I might be a part of perpetuating this inequality. So one of the first questions that I kind of wanted us to have a conversation about is, you know, the question of how professional women do housework, especially like when they're in, you know, like living with someone, like a man, and how do professional women, if at all, contribute to this gender inequality in housework? And so I guess I'll continue talking about me and like my experience, and then Z, you can talk about yours. But like, yeah, I would say that our household is pretty pretty traditionally divided in terms of gender roles. And a lot of that is because of the circumstances of our finances. And so because as a grad student, I don't earn a whole bunch, we can't contribute like 50-50 financially. And so part of my like making up for that agreement in the beginning was that I take on the bulk of the housework and the cooking. And then he pays like the bills and stuff. So I could see, you know, we've been living together for almost 4 years, and I could see that getting to be difficult once I start working. But what we have talked about is that we would hire someone, which you were talking about before we started recording as being part of being also a part of an issue, a problem, but I'll let you talk about that. And yeah, I mean, right now, like, because my schedule is so flexible as a grad student, you know, part of the like one of the corny lines that I feel is corny that a lot of faculty will tell you as a grad student is like, oh yeah, academia is flexible because you can work any 40 hours a week that you want, or plus 40 plus hours. You can work any hours. So it's like you might be working earlier or longer than people, but you are not on like a tight schedule where somebody like where you have to work 9 to 5 kind of thing. So I can take time and cook or clean, whereas Maurice is at work, like at an actual location. And so yeah, I think that it doesn't necessarily interfere with my work schedule to do the work or to do the housework. And because it's just the two of us and like we don't have kids yet or anything, like there aren't a whole bunch of people to like clean up after, you know, and like we're adults, so when it like he's not like just leaving a mess or like leaving, you know, shit all over the place that I need to clean up. I could see how when we have kids it could become an issue if I'm like taking care of, you know, cleaning up after myself, a man, and then also children. So yeah, I think that it's about, you know, like, I mean, there's like the context is important, like where we are or like the stage that we're in our lives, which I know will be different for you since you have a baby now. And I guess you can talk to that in your experience.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm a graduate student and my partner has a full-time job and he's, you know, paying the majority, I wouldn't pay any bills. My money was just used for like savings or just to pay off my debt because I came into the relationship with a lot of debt. I was still doing things that I did. So when I lived on my own, I cleaned my apartment. I did my laundry. I cleaned the bathroom. I did all those things. And then living with my partner, I just added his clothes with my clothes. So it's not like I was doing anything different, but having and so I had, like you were saying, more flexible schedule, so I could wake up and clean and then do work and then clean, like, and divide things throughout the week, so it didn't seem that much. But having a baby, it's like I clean so much more, because he's freaking dirt, like, he, you know, even feeding him, I have to give him a bath because he gets so dirty because he doesn't know how to eat. And he'll, like, you know, he just gets really dirty. And, you know, he's starting to kind of move around on the floor. So whereas before I could just sweep once or twice a week, I have to sweep every day because we have two dogs. And he's, like, moving on the floor. And then there's baby clothes, which he can go through a couple outfits a day if he, you know.
He's such a diva. It's
yeah, like, because well, because he eats. I started now feeding him without clothes on. It's just his diaper because he.
So you can just wipe him down.
Yeah, because even with a bib, he finds ways to get his sleeves dirty, yeah. And or he'll like have an accident, or he'll poop, and just. So it does add a lot more of the work that I have to do in having the baby and in doing things for the household. And so I had talked to my partner about how I wasn't getting a lot of, because right now I'm the primary caregiver because of my flexible schedule and because daycare is so expensive. And I prefer staying with him. So I just make it work where I work on my dissertation and stuff in the evenings, and I do a lot of the stuff during the day that in terms of cleaning and feeding him and doing all this stuff, because you would think that you can just put him, I mean, he's getting a lot better about being independent, but you know, at his developmental stage, you kind of have to engage with him more. Mm-hmm. So I can't just set him down with like a book.
Yeah.
Like I have to read to him. I have to play with him. I can't just work on stuff while he's doing something. And if he is busy, maybe 10 to 15 minutes. And during that time, I'm doing laundry or I'm sweeping. So I actually talked to my partner about how I wasn't getting stuff done because of so much cleaning that I had to do. Mm. And his response was, just be more efficient about your time. Yeah, and I think it's just because he doesn't really understand, you know, and even I wasn't aware, like, what did they say, like 15, 20, 21 hours or something that I spent?
21 to 27.
That makes sense because it's like, okay, that's where all my time is going. Yeah. But it's hard to, like, when he says, like, what did you do today? I'm kind of like, oh my gosh, it seems like I didn't do anything. But for example, this morning, when I woke up, I cleaned the bathroom, I swept the floor, all the floors. I mopped all the floors. I did a load of laundry. I fed the baby all before my partner woke up.
Shit.
And so, and because the baby wakes up at 6.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, it's just like, you know, and how can I be more efficient with my time? You know, by the time I finish doing that, I don't want to write something for my dissertation. And so
it's also hard to think. Like,
your
brain is like, moved away from that.
Yeah. Like, and so he was like, oh, we can just pay someone to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's still not solving the problem of you're not doing anything more. And his response is always like, well, we divide the labor this way. But now that I'm going on the job market and talking about getting a job, I actually brought up and I was like, okay, so now that, jokingly, I was like, you won't be able to say, I contribute financially and you do this. And he's like, okay, well, yeah, well, we'll have more income to pay someone to clean the house. And when we were in our conversation, I realized, oh, he's not expecting to do anything differently. I'm just bringing in more money, but there's still, like, in his mind, there's still that expectation of nothing's going to change for me. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me that I'm going to just have to do more.
Yeah. Which, I mean, now that so with the conversation about, because it's, you know, there's that whole quote, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Like, mm-hmm. that quote exists for a reason, you know, and I think that it's very applicable to men. Because I think that women learn new tricks very easily, you know.
Like, I mean, you have to
learn how to raise a child.
Yeah, you have, like, I had to learn how to wake up at 6 and get shit done in an hour because the baby needs me.
Yeah. So you can learn new tricks if you want to. It's just hard to get men to want to do things that are like, you know, because I mean, taking care of the home is not fun. Like,
we're not doing it
because it's fun. We're doing it because it has to be done.
Yeah.
And for them, it doesn't have to be done because we're doing it.
Yes, yes.
So
if it wasn't us, it was their moms. And if it wasn't their moms, it was a maid. It's like someone's always, and it's not like you were saying, it's not my partner's fault per se to say, I, as a person, am just, like, lazy and messy. It's just when you lived your life in a... When you've been able to go 31 years with very minimal contribution to household things and things just get done.
Yeah.
Why would I assume that after 31 years, I'm going to start doing things I've never done before?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, they literally, like, their brains don't, because they, so socialization is not just about like a, it's not just about habit. It's also about like the way that your brain was developed. And they, their brains were not, like, they weren't taught to have to look at something and see dirt.
Yeah.
You know, or look at something and see mess. Like, it just does not occur. And I remember I went out of town, I went home, like, to LA for like 2 weeks at one point or something like that. And like, I didn't, before I left, I didn't like fold the laundry and put the laundry away. So like Maurice didn't know where the towels were.
Yes, that happens all the time.
And he was like, and he said that he didn't ask me where they were. He said it just occurred to him, like, oh shoot, the towels end up in the closet because she folds them and puts them there.
Yes, yes.
Like it just like his brain just forgot how to process that,
happens,
you know?
A lot.
So there are like little things that you just like, where does the food come from?
Yeah.
Where does, how do the groceries get here? Like, you know, he hasn't grocery shopped in years because he just, I just do it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that it's, there are a lot of things that they take for granted. And, you know, if, say, one day women all over the country or all over the world even just went on strike, like, there would be some, like, I'm sure that there are men that don't know, have forgotten that they need to iron their clothes because their wives do it, or have forgotten, you know, like, there are just so many things that they just take for granted.
Yeah.
And it isn't going to be until we, again, like I said, all put our foot down, it isn't going to be until that point that things start to change, because, so now you have a son.
Yeah.
Will you, like, say you, I don't know. I know that you want another kid. Like, say if it's a, if you have a girl, do you think that you would teach them differently?
Mm.
And regard, and then also alongside your own preferences and desires, like, how do you think that your partner would want to do that? Like, do you think that he would have an issue if you were like, they're both gonna clean just as much, they're both gonna cook just as much, or learn to cook, we're gonna put just as much effort into them learning how to do those things. And it's not going to be like a gender specific thing. Like, how do you think that you guys would handle that? How do you think you would want to?
Yeah. I mean, in our dynamic, my partner does the cooking, which is great. That when I got pregnant, that he took over the cooking, and that has alleviated a lot because it sucks. But I still like clean
cooking
up.
Cooking sucks?
Yes. But I still like clean up and like, you know, put everything away. But I, you know, I was raised in a family where the boys and the girls were, since we were little, we were raised to be, do very specific tasks. And so even seeing, it's just like, I could teach my son and daughter to do something, but they are going to be in a world that has rigid roles about what men and women do. And so someone in school or someone in college or someone that they're in a relationship with, or my mom or his mom, are going to just reinforce the traditional gender expectations. And that's what's really hard that I've learned about. I used to think that I'm just going to teach my son this and it will be different. And yes, I will have a lot of influence, but you don't realize, like, even now, for example, when I stress, you know, one of the things we want, we stress about our son is about how we want him to try a lot of different foods, because we want to make sure that he's not allergic to things. We want to be there. And we also want him to learn how to eat. And so we ask both my mom and his mom to feed him proteins, so like shredded chicken, and we bring it to them. Mm-hmm. And they never do it because they just don't. They're like, it's too hard, he doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, even trying, and in our house it's very consistent, like he eats meats 2 times a day. Mm-hmm. And so when we take him to my mom's or his mom's and he doesn't do that, it's just kind of like, you're so powerless in a sense of, I can do and expect and demand like so much for my child, but at the end of the day, once he leaves my house, I have no control over what happens or what other people teach him or what other people do with him. And so it just gets me to a point where I'm like, should I be preparing him for the roles that will be expected of him in society, in addition to teaching him that it's okay to do whatever? So I think like that's the point that I am now. I'm definitely gonna teach him how to do these things, because I think that it drives me crazy when people are like 30 or 25 and like don't know how to do laundry, mm-hmm. or like don't have a sense of like cleaning. And just like, I mean, it's like sometimes my partner will just like, he'll use a knife and just rinse it and put it back, and he thinks that that's washing it like without soap. And I'm just like, you know, it's just little things like that where I'm just like, that those are the things that I know for sure I'll teach my son and daughter. But in terms of making sure that they learn about egalitarian roles and knowing that men and women should be able to do equal things, I'm not even doing that. So mm-hmm. it's just kind of like, I think at this point it's still unrealistic to believe that that's something that's going to happen. But I don't know, maybe 20 years from now I'll be different, because like you said, millennial men are doing more, but women are still doing the same amount of work.
Yeah.
Over 100 years. So yeah. It's just kind of like, I just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, so the vision that I kind of have, and Maurice and I have talked about it a lot actually at this point, and like how we would, you know, how we would raise our kids and all that. And I think that for me, I do want to raise them to know how to do every, like, into have my, you know, to really enforce with my son. So like, for instance, like what I've seen is like moms will make their daughters make their own bed, but then go and make their son's bed, or make their daughters, you know, clean their room in general, but then clean their, the moms will clean their son's room, you know. So things like that I'm not gonna do. Like both, like all, whoever, whatever gender the kids are, they will be taught the same skills. Now if my son grows up and decides not to do those things in his house and to have his house be organized pretty traditionally, where his wife does all the cooking and cleaning or whatever, I guess that's beyond my control. But I want him to know how to cook. I want him to know, you know, because I also, like, I was an RA in college, and there were so many, you know, freshmen that lived on my floor that would come to me and ask me how to do the laundry.
Yeah, that's, you know, crazy to me.
Yeah, and so it's like, why, like, even if it's a week or 2 weeks or a month before they leave the house, why not make sure they know how to do that?
And yeah, you can look it up.
Yeah, and it's like, I just don't understand what it is that the parents are thinking. Like, why would you send your kid off and they can't do anything?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's just something that I, like, if they choose not to do it, fine. But I want them to know how.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important. And I think that that's the only way that things are going to change. Over time, is that, you know, we all enforce these things. And no, it's not easy. No, it's not fun. No, you don't want to fight with your kids for, you know, to do X, Y, and Z. But I think, you know, we also can't expect, like, we don't have control over who our kids partner with or whether they partner at all, you know? And so you could, for instance, you could raise your son thinking that he's going to have a wife, and then he ends up being gay, or he ends up not getting married. Because also the way that marriage rates are going, like the average age of marriage entry at this point is 28. So you are expecting your son to maybe live by himself for a certain number of years until he gets married or until he gets with somebody. That time span that kids are spending on their own is expanding. So men are not going straight from their parents' house to living in a house with a wife like they were back in the day, you know? So that's something to also keep in mind, that, you know, your son could end up living by himself, unable to cook for 10 years. And then what? You know, maybe you're hoping that he learns, but then he could also not, and he could just eat fast food for 10 years and
that's
then
true.
End up being obese. So, you know,
I wouldn't let him do that, but yes.
Well, not him, but yeah. Just in general, you know, yeah, like, yeah, I'm yeah. sure that there are people that, like, I don't know how mothers think, but you know, when your like son is like a teenager or whatever, and it's the point to start teaching him how to cook, but then you decide not to, what is the expectation? Like, how is he going to eat as an adult?
Yeah.
I don't know if people are thinking that far in advance, but I don't even have kids yet and I'm thinking about it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what y'all's experiences are, listeners, but this is just, you know, a little bit of information so that as you approach child rearing, or if you're already in the midst of child rearing, or you know someone that has kids and you see how they're, you know, raising them. I know you don't want to be getting in people's business about how they raise their kids, but one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, we have as a society gotten to be much more autonomous, and like, you know, so we have our own family and our own kids, and like nobody outside of our immediate family can say anything about how we raise our kids, and it's just like, you know, super individualistic. But when that child grows up and becomes an adult, how they are raised can affect you and yours. And so it's important to share the wealth, share the knowledge. You know, maybe there are things that people just aren't aware of. Again, this article is on Bloomberg.com, and it's called Gender Equality Starts in the Laundry Room. So if you want to just share that article on your Facebook, send it to some people that you know aren't expecting their sons to do any housework, and let them know what, you know, their son's future wives may have in store.
Yeah, or just have a conversation with someone around you, because you'd be surprised at how there's, I mean, my partner and I have been together 10 years, and it took me until recently to be like, oh, I don't think he's ever going to do more stuff. I think he thinks he does a lot. I mean, according to this article, he does more than, you know, men have, but I'm realizing, like, to him, what he's doing is a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, and then he doesn't see all that I do. Mm-hmm. So your example with the towels, like, he just, things are just done and he doesn't know. So I think that it's worth, like, going through and making sure that people are aware of the work that you do, because I think that that's why it's easy to dismiss or devalue the work that mothers or that women do around the house, because that's really time consuming. But if they don't see it or are aware of it, then they just assume that it's really easy.
There are a lot of research articles on how couples divide up housework, and because of my area of interest, which is like, you know, work and family kind of stuff, like careers and work-life balance and all that stuff, I've read a lot of these articles, and what they use are like these things called time use diaries. And so they have people just document like very detailed everything that they have done throughout the day, so like by the hour. And then they have people do this for like a month or a couple months or whatever. And then the researchers go through and they analyze the data. And so what they find is that a lot of couples, when they're interviewed, so prior to the diaries, a lot of the couples, so this is the case for the wives and the husbands, a lot of them are under the impression that they're devoting equal time to housework. Mm. It isn't until they go back and these diaries are analyzed that the couples themselves realize that they aren't doing the same amount of work. And it was even surprising for a lot of the wives. Like, they were a lot of these women are place a lot of emphasis on being in, you know, gender egalitarian relationships. Like, they're like, no, we don't, you know, we both do cooking, we both do cleaning and all that stuff. And then these couples still find that the men are doing less work. And it is because, well, again, like, women have been taught, you know, different ways of cleaning than men. So if you tell a man to clean the kitchen, he's gonna do it differently than the way that a woman would do it on average. So I'm generalizing here, but women might take the time to maybe scrub down the microwave, whereas a man might not. Or a woman might take the time to scrub down the refrigerator, whereas a man might not. So it's like little things like that, or that seem little, that ultimately amount to women doing more work and to spending more time at home cleaning and all that stuff. So it's like, even if you're not spending less time at work than, you know, your husband or your partner, you're getting less, you know, leisure time. Yeah. You know, so men have more time to relax. They might come home and sit on the couch and watch some TV, you know, for a while. Whereas, like, say for me, if I have the TV on, I'm also folding laundry.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Or I'm like, yes. You know, multitasking. I'm not just like sitting just completely relaxed watching TV. It's like, no, we're getting multiple things done, feeding two birds with one scone, like, you know, really like a, you know, like, so yeah. So I think that those are things to think about. And so if you're like me and you have a hard time trying to have these, or like me or Selma, having conversations with your partner about like what he can do or how he can do more, and he's telling you back that he is doing more, maybe y'all could try some of these time use diaries and be like, we're gonna spend a week documenting everything that we do, so that you can see on paper, like, evidence that no, you don't do as much as I do, you know, like, you just don't. And it's not even like a male bashing thing. It's like, there are solutions, there are ways that we can make this more equitable.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think this is, it's really important to talk about, and not only because it's stuff that we're interested in as researchers, but, you know, I think that if you just examine it within your relationship, or even if you're single, mm-hmm. and just examine, like, comparing how you were raised, how other people were raised, or just listening to our stories and thinking whether they are similar or different. I think it's just important to think about these things, because, as Ebony said, it's not just about women spending more time. It's about, on the long term, there's unequal use of time, and it benefits some people and disadvantages others, and that's inequality.
Yeah. Okay, so that wraps up our What's Being Slept On segment. We will have one more episode next week before we wrap up our second season. And so that being said, next week, episode 25 will be the last episode of the season, and then we'll take a break, which we haven't determined how long that break will be yet, but we will let y'all know next week.
Yes. And, you know, as always, feel free to follow us on Instagram at Woke-ish Podcast. Email us at woke.ishpodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to your feedback, especially any requests for collaborations. We always appreciate that from other podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time.
Bye.